Literature for the People, written and read by Sarah Harkness. In memory of my parents, Reg and Eileen Penny, and of my dear brother Jeff, always missed. Introduction. Death of Mr. Alexander Macmillan. Extract from the Macmillan Archive. We much regret to record the death of Mr. Alexander Macmillan, one of the founders of this journal. This is not the place to give a long account of his career. We may limit ourselves to the statement that outside the field of scientific workers, there were few who possessed a greater sympathy with scientific aims, few who had a keener insight as to the place science should occupy in our national life and in our educational systems. It was the hope that a more favourable condition for the progress of science might be thereby secured that led him to enter warmly into the establishment of this journal in 1869. Mr. Macmillan was born in 1818 and died on Saturday last at his residence in Portland Place. Few men of our time have made a better use of a fortune of which they were the architects, or have been less spoilt by prosperity. Charles L. Graves. I have lived among the gods, Alexander Macmillan. The third week of January 1896 opened with blizzards across the east of Britain from Aberdeen to Kent, and drifts a foot high across Norfolk and Suffolk. But by Wednesday 29th of January the snow had gone, and the weather had turned surprisingly warm for the time of year, a glimpse of pale sunlight with just the hint of spring. Early in the morning, a heavily draped horse-drawn carriage halted outside 21 Portland Place, a grand terraced house near Regent's Park in central London, the central house in a symmetrical terrace designed by the Adam brothers, with a highly decorated front porch in the Doric style, and ornamental white pilasters standing out against smoke-blackened London stock brick, the house of a wealthy gentleman. That day the windows were dark, with the curtains closed, a wreath of ivy and yew hanging on the front door. An unvarnished oak coffin was borne out of the house and loaded onto a hearse, and then the horses set off at a slow, dignified pace on the two-mile route across town to Waterloo Station. There, a small crowd of dark-suited and distinguished-looking mourners, alerted by a notice the previous day in the Morning Post, had gathered on Platform 1, waiting to meet the coffin and to board a specially chartered train bound for Liphook in Hampshire. For the deceased, punctuality was a virtue, and the train departed promptly at 11:15. At Liphook Station, the coffin, covered with elegant wreaths of white lilac, lilies of the valley, violets and Scottish heather, was transferred onto an open cart lined with more ivy and evergreens for the mile-and-a-half journey down country lanes to St Mary's Church in the little village of Bramshott. One of the wreaths bore the inscription, "For Auld Lang Syne, a token of deep affection for the dear master's memory, from his friends at Bedford Street." The coffin-bearers were chosen from friends and retainers of the family, and at the churchyard gate stood four high-ranking clergy, led by the Bishop of Southwark. The opening part of the burial service was read in the church, where a large congregation joined in singing, "O God of Bethel, by whose hand thy children still are fed," a favourite hymn of the deceased. It had been sung at his father's deathbed in Scotland over 70 years earlier. Then the procession reformed and passed out to the graveyard, through paths lined with yet more white and purple flowers, to the solemn organ notes of Chopin's funeral march. The final hymn, "Now the labourer's task is o'er," was sung as the coffin was lowered into the moss-lined grave and the bishop pronounced a blessing. The coffin bore the simple inscription, "Alexander Macmillan, born October 3rd, 1818. Died January 25th, 1896. He was laid to rest close to the grave of his 10-year-old grandson, Alistair, who had died of peritonitis just 4 years earlier. Yet for many of the mourners, there was a darker shadow in the graveyard and a missing tomb. Alexander's eldest, unhappy and unconventional son, Malcolm, had last been seen on a mountainside in Turkey some 8 years earlier, and no one knew where he